What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. The Titans have their quarterback. They locked up Ryan Tannehill, a four-year deal worth $118 million, around $91 million in total guarantees. Get the job done, get your guy in at the quarterback position, and John Robinson now has the most important position, not only in the league, but probably professional sports, locked up as he continues to move ahead for the rest of this week here in free agency, Joe.
It's a big deal. And you can always look at a deal and say, man, the Titans, that's a lot of guaranteed money. Or that's, you're signing up for 3 years with a guy who gave you 13 games. I mean, you could say, well, it could have been a little more team friendly, but That's what a negotiation is. I mean, you have to give some to the other side. And Ryan Tannehill, I do believe, would have been very attractive on the open market. So to me, to get him in at under $30 million a year, and again, the cap hit this year is 22 and change, I think it's going to very shortly look like a bargain deal. And maybe Tannehill will revert to Dolphins Tannehill next year, and it'll just be, oh, you overreacted, and this was an unnecessary risk, and why did you sign up? You just didn't have enough information. But to me, this is a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer given your situation. It's never going to be perfect. You don't have 3 years to figure this out. You don't have assurances. But of all the things that are facing John Robinson right now, and he's got some stuff happening real soon today, I think this was a gimme.
615-737-1025. We'll take your calls and your texts. What's your reaction to Ryan Tannehill signing with the Titans? Let's go to Ty, who has called in wanting to weigh in on the Titans. Ty, go ahead. Thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hi, guys. Good morning. I'm not going to call it a dumb deal. I just call it not a very smart deal. I mean, Tannehill gave you a little bit over half a year of above-average quarterback play. He was surrounded by great talent. I just don't believe in him like that. I would have franchised him, see if he can run it back. And if he run it back, you got a chance to redo the deal and try to extend it after that. But Miami Dolphins, all those years of Miami Dolphins were being hurt, with being an average quarterback. And then just because he was better than Mariota makes him look better. I mean, I don't get that, especially with the quarterbacks that are coming out next year. Maybe you could have been 9-7 like you usually are, because Titans are usually 8-8, 9-7, right in that range. I just don't get it. I mean, get a franchise-altering quarterback, because he's not a franchise-altering quarterback. He's a placeholder. That's what he is. So, I mean, he'll probably do okay. He'll probably be above average, and they'll struggle to get 9-7, 10-6, and then be out in the first or second round. And, I mean, we've been like that for like 10 years, and I'm tired of the same above-average quarterback, and we believing in him like he's going to do something, and he's not. So, I mean, that's my opinion, and I'll hang up and listen.
Hey, thanks for the call, Ty. I appreciate it. I think that is I'm not going to say a popular opinion here locally, but I do think most people wonder, okay, it is 13 games, and while he looked great in those 13 games, do you worry at all that maybe that's an aberration and he's more like what he was in Miami with the inconsistency? And I think that's where the argument for the franchise tag may have come in at that point.
But that was inaccurate. What Ty said was inaccurate. He wasn't an above-average quarterback. He was the best quarterback in the league, if we're going by numbers.
He was.
it wasn't another average blah, 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 get out in the first round. It was the AFC Championship game. So, you know, I mean, the most recent information is not average above average. It's much better than that. Does that guarantee it will continue that way? No. But again, the Dolphins, the Miami thing, this is a great example of, I look, like people looking at Mariota from outside the league, from outside Nashville, for many years, we're like, yeah, he's okay. He's not that good. And what are people saying here? Yeah, but, you know, what about the people around him? I mean, Ty just said Tannehill had a great talent around him. I mean, isn't that like the excuse for Mariota for all those years? Like, he doesn't have people to throw to, all these weapons, et cetera. Look, the perception of Mariota around the league was very different than in Nashville. And I think that's what it is for the most part with Tannehill, too.
In Miami, you're talking about.
I'm saying when Mariota was quarterback around the league, people looked at Mariota and thought one thing.
Yeah.
And people in Nashville thought another thing, right? Right. You know, I think with Tannehill, I looked at Tannehill in Miami. It's the same thing. Like, yeah, he's okay. He's all right. He's had all these years of, you know, and now you think he's this? So I get that. I thought the exact thing when they signed him. But again, you got to go back and look at it or talk to people. And I did a thing last year, you know, talking to people who were there year after year, week after week with Tannehill. And I was like, well, you know, remember, one, the dude was a receiver in college. Then he switched to quarterback and he was so good, you know, he was a top 10 pick. But you got to keep that in mind. He was way behind the curve compared to some guys coming in as an NFL quarterback and actually shouldn't have played as a rookie. In 2016, he was becoming more than just an above-average quarterback. He was becoming much better than that. He was leading the Dolphins to the playoffs. He blew his knee. He was done. They still got to the playoffs. Matt Moore played in that play. I think they lost to the Steelers on the road. But that they were there because of Tannehill. And from then on, he got hurt. And, again, that's where I think the real worry and the risk part of this comes in is the injury part of this. Because they didn't have it last year, but he did have it in 16, 17, 18. But as far as his play, you could look at Miami and say, actually, he was growing into something better than just a whatever dude from the Dolphins. Then the injuries hit. Look, man, this might not work out, but I think logically, going through all the information you have available, I think John Robinson did a good job here.
I do, too. And to your point earlier, this is going to look like, I think, a really team-friendly contract as other quarterback contracts continue to get doled out, not only this week, but here in the next couple years as well. I mean, like, at some point, Patrick Mahomes, his deal is going to get done, and that's going to totally reset the bar in terms of where quarterback deals go. I mean, he's probably going to make in excess of $40 million per year. I mean, it's certainly within the realm of possibility for Patrick Mahomes. So I think this contract for Tannehill will look fine. You hear the regression argument a lot for proponents of maybe going in a different direction than Ryan Tannehill. That's the argument they use. Okay, well, he was really, really good. You know, the 9.6 yards per attempt or whatever the number was this past year, that's obviously not going to be sustainable long term. But my counter to that has been, okay, even if he does regress a little bit and those numbers come down, you're still talking about a pretty good quarterback and probably a level of quarterback that we haven't seen here in Tennessee for a long time. And if you're John Robinson, the Titans, I think you live with that.
Yeah, the numbers will come down, absolutely. You hope if they come down to, you know, 8 yards per attempt, high sevens, that's still really, really good. You'll take that all day. 9.6 is a crazy number. But, like, again, back to Ty's call. You know, he's a placeholder. You know, the draft next year. Well, first of all, the Titans are not going to go 1-15 and get Trevor Lawrence. So I don't know. Like, people are so obsessed with the unknown, you know, in sports. It's like, but this could be a draft pick that could be better. You know, we could go get this guy or that guy who looks good in college. If the known is good, go with the known. A good known is better than the unknown. It's just that people hope that you find this, you know, this lightning in a bottle with a rookie or go out there and find someone new. I mean, Ryan Tannehill worked really well with this. People working week to week. He and Arthur Smith worked well together. He and this offensive line and Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith, you know, they worked well together. We saw it. Like, believe what you're seeing at some point. I understand, hey, after a few weeks, I was like, okay, so Tannehill's just on, he's just on a hot streak. And, okay, hey, this happens.
Yeah.
It happens to quarterback. You know, you get rolling like this and just red hot and good for you. But, come on, he'll regress. Well, at some point, you're like, well, it looks like that's who he is with these guys. I don't really care what happened in Miami at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to focus on the new situation. And the other part of that is like, you know, I know there were several different coaches in Miami, but Adam Gase, he's gone elsewhere. It's been pretty bad. Like, it's been pretty bad to watch. So that's when you have to say, okay, how much of it was Tannehill in Miami? Obviously, the injuries factor in, but also how much of it was the situation and the coaching he was getting in Miami? We've seen how much of an impact that can have on a lot of teams around the NFL and a lot of specific players in general. Like, cool. That's a big part of it.
And another thing with Tannehill in Miami is here's when he had a rushing game. I mentioned 2016. He was having like a Pro Bowl caliber kind of year before he got hurt. That was also the year that Jay Ajayi just went nuts. So it was a big part of that. Like, you can't just give it all to Tannehill. But again, look at that. His attempts per game went well down that year. His performance went up. Like, it helps any quarterback to be able to have an actual running game to pair with your skills and to enhance your play-action opportunities. And that's what happened with the Dolphins that year, and Tannehill was better for it. And now what happens? He comes here. He doesn't have to throw 35, 40 times a game. He can throw 22 times a game and be really effective. So you can say, well, why do you want to pay that much for a quarterback if the running back is a focal point of your offense? Well, it does not mean the quarterback's not the most important position on the field. It still is. But balance in the NFL, it's always going to work. And those two guys work so well off each other that was basically, I mean, it was one of the best two or three offenses in the league once it turned around from basically one of the two or three worst in the league last year. And it wasn't 3 or 4 weeks, it was 13.
Obviously now, and the Titans have a lot of decisions to make that are of more importance as we move ahead here in free agency and as we get closer to the draft as well. But the backup quarterback position is going to become a topic of conversation at some point. The Titans finally got to a place last year with Tannehill coming in where they felt really, really good about that situation. And even when Tannehill took over, I think you felt okay about Mariota being the backup at that point in terms of, you know, he's a pretty good backup quarterback to have lying around. But now, obviously, that's a lot more uncertain. And I think the Titans really have kind of three routes to go here. You can stay and just trust Logan Woodside that he's going to be the guy and he's going to be the backup quarterback. You can bring in a veteran, which may be difficult to do given how much money that would cost and how many other needs you have. Or you can address the backup quarterback position at some point in the draft. If you're John Robinson, how do you go about doing that as they move forward here?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, like, you're going to have to sacrifice in some areas. You're talking about you just paid the quarterback. You're going to pay your running back in some way, whether you're tagging or long-term deal. You may or may not be paying your right tackle. You've got to figure out pass rush. I mean, you know, start adding things up, and there's a salary cap. So a backup quarterback to me seems like an area of likely risk for this team. I think the idea of, you know, the idea of drafting someone and someone you like somewhere in the middle there and trying to develop that person, I think that's an attractive possibility. I mean, you could look around out there and, you know, who's out there? You've got, Drew Stanton. I covered him in college. That'd be fun. How about, you know, Chase Daniel? You know, you get some Chad Henne. Guys floating around out there. I mean, it's going to be
what's Neil O'Donnell doing nowadays?
There
he can still play.
There you go.
Let's go full circle here. Bring Neil O'Donnell back to the Titans.
That could be fun.
That's right.
Who have you got out there? I mean, Case Keenum.
Yeah.
But
all these guys are going to cost some money to bring in, and that's money the Titans may not have at that point. That's kind of the predicament I think they're going to be in.
Yeah, so, I mean, they know the numbers, or they know the possible numbers here. I guess, like, to me, if I had to guess what they're going to do, I would guess that they might be looking at addressing in the draft. But we'll see. I guess it also seems a little bit, you know, risky to not try to get one of these guys that can be a true – now, that's a true placeholder and come in a pinch and help you out. But, I mean, you have committed to the point here. I mean, you're banking on Tannehill not just being close to what he was last year, but also to being healthy.
Yeah, it's going to be something that you have to weigh the risk-reward as the Titans move forward here. When we come back, we now know that Tom Brady is not going to be here in Nashville with the Titans. So where does he go next? We'll get into that coming up. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad from The Athletic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Jeff Darlington from ESPN talking about the Ryan Tannehill deal for the Titans. Also, what does it mean for Tom Brady as he moves forward here in this process? And Joe, I think you and I have both said we have believed all along the most likely scenario for Tom Brady is to return to the New England Patriots. I feel even stronger about that today. But there are still a few intriguing possibilities out there when you consider what Tom Brady may do as this free agency period begins this week. And one of those teams that you and I have talked about, and I believe that Charles Robinson brought up to us last week, was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Because you look at those guys that they have on offense, when you're talking about Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, all these different weapons that they have in Tampa Bay, that's going to be very, very attractive, I think, for any quarterback to consider going to. If you're Tom Brady, where do you think the most likely scenario now that the Titans are off the table outside of New England would be? And how much consideration do you think he should give to a place like Tampa Bay who has the weapons that they have offensively?
Yeah, some, no doubt. The Chris Sims angle on here is interesting. And, you know, Peter King, look, if Peter King makes it one of his quotes of the week, you know, that tells me he put some stock in it. I mean, Chris Sims did spend a year in New England. He had one coaching year, coaching assistant, and he's close with Kyle Shanahan. But his quote is, it was Tom Brady's number one choice to go to San Francisco and be the starting quarterback. Now, Tom Brady, for people who don't know, is from California. That's a team that could go win it all right now. Also, Tom Brady knows that back in the day, there was a whole thing with Jimmy Garoppolo, and he's going to be the guy. And so I guess, like, did Tom Brady really like the idea of, like, dunking on Garoppolo twice? Like, you're exiled from here, and also now I'm going to come take your next job, too. I don't know, but it's really interesting that Chris Sims is the one who reported that the Niners were basically deciding not to go after Brady, which I think is the smart move because they've got – I mean, they're built for some more than just like one run, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're built – Jimmy G definitely underwhelmed. In the second half of that Super Bowl, you're like, okay, there's the great quarterback and there's the okay quarterback. And who won the Super Bowl? The team with the great quarterback. But still – think you could probably win it with him. So now Brady, does that mean he's like, would he seriously consider Tampa Bay? Is Brady like California or bust? Or I'm going to stick with it. I think he's going to end up in New England again. But I think also if you're him, you're going to enjoy this process and you want the Patriots to be better. You want to have a chance there to do it. Now, hey, can they trade for DeAndre Hopkins?
Yeah,
trade that first-round pick?
All of a sudden, New England looks pretty good then.
That would – I mean, just imagine, man. I mean, really, DeAndre Hopkins with anyone. He's great with Deshaun Watson. He'd be great with anyone. But Tampa Bay does have to be intriguing for Tom Brady because, man, you talk about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, but Mike Evans got to be one of the most underrated players in the NFL.
Easily.
Right?
Yeah, easily. Like, and then all they got to do is really just get a consistent running back in the back, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, they are a little, you know, Peyton Barber. And,
it's not that good. It's pretty much three-string wide running backs playing starting roles.
Yeah.
And so that's bad. I want Tom Brady just because I like chaos. As you guys know, I love chaos.
Yeah.
I'm the same guy that on college basketball said that I wanted all the teams under 500 to win conference championships just to throw a monkey wrench in the operation. I want to see Tom Brady go to the Colts just to throw a monkey wrench in everybody. Everybody's talking about Tampa Bay, Chargers, Raiders, which I would love to see because, you know, personally I'm a Raider fan. But just to throw a monkey wrench, I just want him to go to the Colts and then play in this division.
To the Colts. Oh, man.
Then play in this division.
Imagine.
And then play
go to
twice.
The place where they've got a statue of Peyton outside the building.
And I want
just
him
get in there.
Yeah.
Every game day to take a picture with his family right in front of the Peyton Manning statue.
Is he gonna, if he does that, does he wear number 12? Take Luck's number? I mean.
That is true.
Who knows?
He can reinvent himself. He has to reinvent himself. He has to get a new
He'd
number.
Have to be 12, right? I mean, that would just have
it's
to.
It's Tom Brady.
If, like, you're not going to the Colts unless that's part of the deal. Like, I get Luck's number, right? I mean, I'm Tom Brady. Man, I've not even really thought about Brady to the Colts, but that would be a ton of fun. That would be a ton of fun
because
in this division.
Think
I don't know if Titans fans would like that very much.
I don't think they would either. But because I just think they are in a market for a quarterback. And I'm just throwing it out there because I like chaos. I'm not saying that Tom Brady's going to go to the Colts. I'm not going to stick with that. I just like chaos in sports. We need it at this point. But I also think that when we talk about the AFC South, when we talked about it earlier, about how, you know, the Texans and the Titans can both be those 1-2 teams in the AFC South, we're forgetting the Colts are probably just a quarterback away from potentially doing that. They got one of the best offensive lines in the country. They got, you know, running back that they can rely on in Marlon Mack. They got
underrated guy.
They got a wide receiver that's he's okay.
Ty's still good. He's getting up there.
But he's getting up there, but I think they have the potential, and then they got a very underrated defense.
Solid defense.
So I think that they're a quarterback away from, you know, just being in that conversation. Maybe not a Super Bowl, maybe not a strong playoff push or whatever, but you know, at least, you know, can be in that conversation with the Texans and with the Titans.
I'll tell you a place that would be really, you speak of chaos, like a place that would be really intriguing to me, which is not going to happen. Like, there's a 0% chance. I shouldn't say zero, but there's probably a 0.1% chance this would ever happen. Brady to Minnesota. More consistent than Kirk Cousins.
Don't mess with my guy, Kirk Cousins.
I know you love you some Kirk Cousins. You like that. I get it. But, you know, Diggs, Thielen, Rudolph, even though Rudolph's kind of a shell of himself now. You know, Dalvin Cook out of the backfield there in Minnesota. All of a sudden, you bring Brady into that mix. Pretty good team. I mean, they're a pretty good team already.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I said, that's not going to happen. But that's my pipe dream for where Brady could go.
Yeah, you don't hear. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Other than the Niners, there's not a lot of, well, I guess the Bucks too. I was going to say it's a lot of AFC looking at Tom Brady. I'm trying to think of anybody else that's totally outside the box. Because, you know, we don't have much time left with this. You know, pretty soon it's going to be
a resolution.
It's actually going to be a resolution. And then we'll never, ever be able to guess again where Tom Brady might end up. I do. It sounds like Tampa Bay, you know, is going to do all it can. You know, something like this. Can Tampa Bay sell itself by Zoom or by Skype?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, that's another thing with all this stuff. Like, would it really matter, Tom Brady going on a visit down there? Would that seal the deal? Would that make the difference? I don't know. But this is probably why teams, even though, you know, like, we're grateful. I'm grateful for the league keeping business open. But if you're a GM and now your visits, you get those 30 visits of potential draftees too, all that stuff. I get why teams aren't happy about things carrying on because it's making it harder to do your job. There's no doubt about that.
I will ask you guys this real quick, though. Out of all the teams that Tom Brady is being linked to, who has the better coach? Because there's a lot of strong coaches in this. You got John Gruden. He's cool. He's a little quirky.
You rank him number one,
nah,
right?
Yes, you do.
I actually wouldn't. I would not rank him number one. To me, Bruce Arians, to me, is very underrated. Yeah. I like him personally, you know. I think he's done a great job, especially as a Raider fan, watching what Carson Palmer was with the Raiders, and then all of a sudden watching him what he was with Arizona. It was two completely different quarterbacks. And, you know, I give him credit for that and, you know, for Big Ben emerging a little bit up there. So I think I give him a lot of credit. He's very underrated. But if I'm throwing the Colts in there, then obviously I think he would be one.
Yeah, you put him one.
Like, I don't know what's
your coach.
And then I'd probably put Shanahan two, and then Bruce three.
Like, I don't know what to make of Anthony Lynn with the Chargers. Like,
I'm not sold on him. He would be five, easy.
Yeah, but obviously, when we're talking coaches in this discussion, I mean, it's Belichick at number one.
Belichick's number right. one.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also like, what would Brady be looking for? I mean, he knows what he has in Belichick. You're right. Bruce Arians has worked some wonders with quarterbacks. I still have my questions about Tom Brady just being a moldable piece of clay right now in his career, you know? I feel like Tom Brady kind of knows what he likes, what he wants, and what he can do. It's kind of be like, this is what we're going to do. I'm Tom Brady. You know, would that work with a Bruce Arians? I don't know. I think another reason to stay in New England.
And that's why I put Kyle Shanahan at two, because I think Kyle Shanahan, being a young coach and kind of not figuring out what he wants at quarterback yet, he'll probably just be like, oh, Tom Brady, do what you want to do. I don't care.
He's friends with Sean McVay. That means he can tell anybody anything he wants, right?
That's right. Exactly.
In this league, man, if you're friends with Sean McVay, you're – or is it now is it you're friends with Kyle Shanahan?
You're friends
is it
with Kyle Shanahan. Okay. Maybe Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur did a good job in year one.
How about Brady to Green Bay?
Yeah. Brady Rodgers.
Get out of there, Rodgers.
They both wear number 12.
Yeah.
He comes in and steals his number two.
Now, that'd be a power move.
Just disrespectful, that old Tom Brady. When we come back, there's talk that the NBA may be out until June with this coronavirus stuff swirling about and continuing to evolve on a daily basis. How do we react to that? How do we think other sporting leagues we'll react to that. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it was a weekend full of social distancing for many in our community and around this country. And, you know, obviously last week the big story and continues to be the big story in the world of sports is the coronavirus and the impact it's had on sports as a whole.
In the world, actually.
In the world. I mean, yeah.
The world of the world.
The world of the world. Not even just the world of sports. You know, we should be talking about getting ready for an NCAA tournament this week, the playoff push in the NHL and the NBA. And instead, we're talking about the coronavirus and its impact on sports. And look, I mean, it came out last week, last Wednesday night, the NBA suspends their regular season. The NHL pauses their season the next day. NCAA tournament gets canceled. All these different things happen. And I think we have just assumed, Joe, that it's just a matter of time before this season comes back. And, we've talked about, the beginning of April, maybe the start date. Maybe that's when you can consider coming back. The more and more information that starts to come out and more we kind of get a hold on how widespread this thing potentially could be, the more I start to wonder, are those leagues going to come back this year? I mean, the NBA is talking about maybe not coming back until June. They're talking about a three-month hiatus potentially being the best-case scenario. The CDC came out yesterday and said they recommended no gatherings of 50 people or more for the next 8 weeks. So that takes you into May right there if you're a sporting league. So I guess the question is, what do we make of all this in terms of what this could potentially mean for the NBA and the NHL specifically and their return this season? Because the more I start to hear these things, the more I wonder whether or not there will be a return of the NBA and the NHL this season.
No, I think my mind's totally open on any of it, including nothing left eventually. I'm certainly hopeful that there's some sort of postseason for the NBA and the NHL. But quick PSA, here's why, try to take this stuff seriously, please, and, do what the scientists are asking you, even though you may know, you're fine and you can just get a fever for a couple weeks and who cares? There are other people who this could kill. So don't listen to people who are like, oh, the death rate's nothing, there's no cases. Well, Italy just reported 368 new deaths yesterday. Yep. One day. So Italy is basically a couple weeks ahead of where we are. And so if we take this seriously and really lock it down right now, no matter what you think about it, you can think it's some sort of a conspiracy virus, to whatever. You call it political. You can scream about how idiotic this all is. Just if we all sort of do what we're being asked to do by people who actually know about this stuff, maybe we can reduce the overall time. I hate what this is doing to the economy and to people who count on customers coming in their bars and restaurants and all that stuff. But, can we just have a little bit of, you know, smart listening to people and doing what they're asking and seeing what it will do. I'd love to see that, because I don't want this to last forever and ever and get worse and worse. You know, the flattening the curve, which is what they talk about when they talk about just social distance yourself and stay away from people and don't let it spread. Don't let it multiply like it does in big crowds. Maybe that'll work. I'd like to find out. Anyway, that's the end of my PSA.
I like it.
I think that everything's on the table, and I really hope, like you said, the CDC thing last night basically guarantees that for 2 weeks there won't be crowds, at least. Now, you could at some point bring stuff back without crowds within that window. That's possible. That doesn't end sports for that amount of time. But it pretty much ends the idea of sports with crowds until mid-May. So
what at the earliest.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what do things look like at that point? I mean, it's already, like, to me, I mean, I'm like, permanently depressed right now because of the NCAA tournament. It's one of my favorite things in sports, and it's gone. And that sucks. And so I hope that doesn't happen for the NBA and NHL, because – those postseasons are amazing. I'm trying to look at the bright side here, Robbie. July is a terrible sports month. If we had, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs and NBA playoffs through, like, the end of July,
that'd be cool.
I'd be cool with that, you know? I would definitely be cool with that. So, like, I'll take whatever we can get here, but I think it's pretty clear you're going to have some kind of amended, you know, regular season. I mean, you're going to have to. And so then is it going to get to the point where it's like, well, take the playoff picture now and go? Or are you going to have a little bit of, you know, whatever it is, really abbreviated last gasps to try to get into the playoffs or play in games or whatever, and then have some sort of, you know, 5-game series in the playoffs, mm-hmm. 3 games? I don't know. I think a lot of things around the table.
Maybe they should just go to 72. Just cut off 10 games and just go to 72, and then wherever you're at that point, then you're...
I think at this point...
Because the Grizzlies are like 3.5 games behind, are in eighth up, place. Yeah. So, up They're in eighth up. Place. So, yeah. So, I mean, just go 72 games and then just cut off 10.
Well, if you could do that, that'd be great. I'd love that if you could do it, but...
I think at this point, both the NBA and the NHL, when they come back, you're probably just going to have to go right in the playoffs. Because, I mean, you got to think about next year, too. I mean, you don't want to push the start time back, especially if you're the NHL. I know the NBA was kind of considering doing this anyway. But pushing the start time back for next year back, because you can't go through a whole playoffs, have a season end in late August, and then say, oh, yeah, by the way, in 2 weeks, training camp's firing up.
Right.
Be ready.
Right. People have to have an off season. Now, a counter to that, especially if you're someone who, you know, makes money off this league, or, you know, the counter would be like, well, right now is your off season, so sit at home and binge on whatever shows you want to binge on and relax, because the off season is going to have to be abbreviated now the way things are.
Right, but you've got free agency in the draft, like all these different things that you've got to figure out at that point. And, Joe, I've kind of been thinking about this over the weekend, and you tell me whether you agree or disagree, but I almost feel like, you know, the NBA was the one that really got the ball rolling on this in terms of suspending their season. Obviously, we've seen a few cases of coronavirus in the league itself of players testing positive. I kind of almost feel like they have to be the first ones to come back before other sporting leagues will make the decision to come back as well. Like, you know, the NBA led the ball and got the ball rolling in terms of suspending play, and I kind of feel like they're going to be the ones that have to come back first in order for other leagues to make that decision. Because the last thing you want to do, like if you're the NHL, is say, all right, we're coming back. So-and-so, and we don't care if the NBA is back or not. And then you come back, and one of your players has coronavirus. Like, that's the last thing you want to do. So I almost feel like the NHL, maybe even the MLS to a certain degree, even though maybe it's outside and it's different, and, you know, I'm not much of a scientist to factor in how much that factors into things. I almost feel like the NBA is going to have to be the first league to come back, and then other leagues will react after that.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but they do in some ways kind of lead the way for sports leagues in certain things. So that may be true. I mean, I think if the NHL said, okay, we figured it out and we're going to do this and we're going to play 3 weeks with no crowds and then, you know, the problem right now is we're speculating on stuff that, like, there's no information available yet to tell us whether that'll happen. And by the way, another PSA for anyone who tells you, like, oh, we only have X number of cases, X number of deaths, blah, blah, blah. We don't test anybody in this country yet. We're just starting to test people. Anyway, yes, the NBA may well be the team that, or the team, the league that leads the way. But I think it's going to be just like what we saw last week with the conference tournaments, where it was a domino effect.
Yeah,
whoever does it first, you know, it'll probably all happen quicker. I mean, I think they all, it's kind of, you kind of have to all work more in concert with each
other
now, too,
right?
They've got to
be in communication with each other, right?
Yeah. Like, to me, this is where, I mean, basically, we're getting closer and closer to, like, federal mandates on some things.
Yeah.
Whereas you're seeing this, you know, we have Mayor John Cooper, you know, saying, please close down your bars on Lower Broadway. And you got Steve Smith saying, I'm not going to do it. And you've got, you know, Chicago locked it down. Different cities are doing different things. You know, we're kind of moving closer to probably some federal mandates on more things and more restrictions than suggestions. To me, with sports too, it probably makes sense for, maybe we need like an overall sports commissioner, a czar of sports, you know.
I'll do
it. But yeah. I mean, actually, college sports badly needs that, and we saw that last week. They need someone in charge of college sports, like a commissioner.
Yes.
But I think at the least, these people have to be talking to each other all the time, right? Like, I'm not going to go out there and start doing this if you guys aren't going
to
do
it,
right?
Yeah, if you're the NBA and the NHL, I mean, you got to talk to each other regardless if you want to or not because of arena availability. Like, you've got players or teams sharing arenas. So if you've got a schedule that you're wanting to come out with of how you're going to handle your season, you got to check with the NBA anyway to make sure that works, because – if you got the NBA trying to schedule something on one night and the NHL doing the same thing, obviously that's not going to work. So I think there's forced communication there to begin with.
Yeah, that's a good point. They share and must, you know, work together on fumigating various arenas. So, you know, the NBA schedule right now, like basically, I guess, you know, they could restart late May and then you get to late July with the playoffs, which I assume would be about the same for the NHL. You know, look, man, at this point it sounds amazing. It's crazy to think about how a few days ago I still thought, well, they'll still play the NCAA tournament, no fans, and they'll test everyone, and at least we'll have like competition to watch on television, and that seems so far away now. I mean, I just talked to, you know, David Ubbin, our Vols beat writer. We did a podcast on the Vols, and he was like, I'll bet right now football is disrupted. To me, football being disrupted seems so far away and crazy, but I think everyone should have a totally open mind about what it could be, and also should be wanting to try to help and pitch in on making it as short as possible.
I think you could pretty much guarantee at this point the NFL draft not going to take place as originally planned.
The NFL draft?
Yes. It's just not going to happen. I mean, the draft itself will happen, but it's not going to be like in Las Vegas in front of a bunch of crowds.
Well,
that's already
done.
Yeah.
No. I mean, the NFL draft might be like old days where guys just get called like they're in class and it's like, hey, you got drafted number three overall.
Congratulations.
Like in the 60s.
I think that'd be kind of cool to watch. If you could somehow videotape all this stuff, it'd be awesome.
Hey, I know the league loves these massive gatherings and the draft was amazing in Nashville last year, but we just want to know who's picking what players.
Yeah. When we come back, Rick Pitino is back in the news and back in the world of coaching in college basketball. We'll react to that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Rick Pitino's back, baby. Back in college basketball. Agreed to become head coach at Iona College this past Saturday. Has been coaching in Greece for the past couple of seasons. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, when you hear that Rick Pitino is back in the game in college basketball, what's your initial reaction to that? Because, quite honestly, I'm not sure that's something I expected to see again.
Well, first of all, this has got to be the greatest news dump ever in sports. Is like the Saturday of, you know, when sports just got canceled. And Iona's like, by the way, Rick Pitino. It's incredible. And I know it's Iona, so it's like, hey, if you're Iona,
why not?
What have you got to lose? But, like, remind yourself of, like, Rick Pitino. I mean, it's scandal on top of scandal, which is why he is considered radioactive by, you know, major college basketball programs. Also, you know, like Louisville is about to get pounded for, you know, there's a notice of allegations coming for stuff that happened under Pitino. You know, of course, there was all the stripper stuff and everything, which, you know, is why they vacated the 2013 championship.
Yeah.
But then there was all this stuff with Brian Bowen and the FBI wiretaps and Pitino assistant, you know, Kenny Johnson. I mean,
yeah, so it's different scandals. Like, it's not the same one.
Yeah. And so what this means is that Pitino, great chance he gets a show cause.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the new thing, or not new, but there, you know, the NCAA wants these show causes to have teeth so that coaches can't just hop around to the next job and leave all the people behind who didn't do anything being punished. Because, of course, Louisville is going to argue, well, we just cleaned house, and why should we have to pay for this? Well, I agree. Pitino should be the one who pays for it. So he could have a show cause, and Iona could be hiring a coach who has to, like, be suspended for a year or something, you know, or not be able to fully – right, or be able to fully recruit. I mean, all this stuff. I mean, I understand it. Rick, like, hey, we're talking about Iona basketball. So right there, you win.
I can't say I've ever talked about Iona basketball in my entire life.
I got to make sure I have this right. I believe Iona is where Jeff Ruland, former Washington Bullets star, played his college ball. Iona has some tradition in basketball.
Yes, but they do.
But, that's the only upside I can possibly see, is that it gets people to talk about Iona. But, again, if that's what you want to do, then don't, you know, then – I mean, if it felt like an under-the-rug news dump announcement that Rick Pitino is your new coach, it's just bizarre. And again, like, he's, I think, going to get nailed for this, and so he's going to be limited. And Rick Pitino is a great coach. There's no questioning that he's a great coach. It's also, like, there are coaches that have scandal and stuff, and then there's what this guy's had over the last several years. It's incredible. I mean, it's just a steady stream of everything you think of when you think of a dirty program, you get it from Rick Pitino.
Yeah, which is why I'm looking around. I'm like, well, I guess you're right that we're sitting here talking about Iona basketball, so I guess from their standpoint, it's worth it. But to your point, Joe, let's say he does get hit with a show cause. Like, what's the point then? Like, what are you doing if you're Iona? Like, what is going on? Like, why would you make that decision?
You still have a famous guy coaching, I guess. You still have a face of the program and you know, a guy who – well, this is another thing, too, you know, with Rick Pitino. I mean, Rick Pitino, for people who don't remember, he had this little chubby guard named Billy Donovan playing for him in the 1987 tournament and got Providence to the Final Four. And, you know, from there, his career – exploded. Of course, he was in the NBA. That didn't go well, but Kentucky, Louisville. You know, Rick Pitino, even Providence, there's a certain level of, you know, of booster existence, and way different than Louisville or Kentucky, but still, even at Providence, like, you've got things in place to where you can cheat, okay? I mean,
yes.
Like, you've got the things that you need to be able to participate in the underground economy that is part of college athletics. I don't know that you have that at Iona. Now, he's a great coach, and they'll run his press, and it'll be fun to watch, and there will be attention. And so I could see him winning because he's a good coach. But, hey, any coach will tell you, you know, you know, it's the Jimmys and Joes, X's and O's thing. I mean, any coach will tell you that. There's a limit to what you can do on a dry erase board. So is Rick Pitino gonna be able to start getting 4-5-star kids that I own? I mean, to me, if you're Pitino, you're looking at this like, go there, do well, stay clean, don't get in any trouble, amend my image, and I'll go get a job I actually want. So if you're Iona, you want to sign up for a guy who's just using you for a short-term thing when a show cause is coming that might make him unable to do anything anyway? I don't know, man.
It's very interesting. And, you know, the world of college basketball has its warts. I mean, there's no way around it. A lot of it has to do with like the AAU circuit. I mean, there are just people in contact, especially with some of these, you know, these top tier players. We've seen it scandal after scandal in college basketball in terms of players getting paid, illegal recruiting going on, like all of these different things. Do we think there's ever going to be a way to fully police college basketball, and not even just college basketball, college sports in general? Because I think, let's not be naive here. This goes on in college football as well. This goes on with probably, if you root for an SEC team, probably at some point in time, they've had these things go on too, where, you know, paying players under the table, all of these different things, maybe that nobody's even found out about yet. That's just the world that we live in now, especially with college basketball. When you've got maybe 1 year with these guys, you get them to come to your program, then they're off to the NBA. I'm not sure we're ever going to come up with a perfect way to go about handling like these recruiting violations and, you know, paying guys under the table, all this other stuff. But I do wonder like how much of an impact the Patino news out of Louisville, this big FBI investigation in college basketball, like how much of a difference has that made in terms of the way recruiting is handled now in college basketball?
No, Will Wade's still the coach at LSU.
Yeah, so that tells you a lot.
I mean, I think Bill Self's about to get nailed because there's clear evidence of Kansas on these tapes cheating, and which is no surprise to anybody. But I guess I would answer that with how many people right now are speeding in Nashville?
Probably a lot.
How many of them are getting tickets for it?
Few.
I mean, you can't police this. So to me, this is why if name, image, likeness happens, and it's going to happen in some form, and the NCAA is going to try to limit it, but I would love to see the money on the table. I would love to see the bidding wars of the boosters and really see how much money flies around, because you've got to have the top players to win. And this is a billion, multi-billion dollar industry, and anyone who says otherwise is naive. So let's see the money. I'd love it. The problem is the NCAA is going to try to limit that, and there's still going to be this underground economy because, honestly, people who are in charge of this know that that has to exist. They can say they want to police it and get rid of it, but they know it has to exist.
When we come back, Darren McFarland of Darren, Donick, and Chase will join us. We'll get his reaction on the Ryan Tannehill news of him signing with the Titans yesterday. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.